having got you all in this room together, we thought we wouldn't let you get away without giving you a little geography lesson before we give out some prizes. But I wanted to try to make it not too boring for you. So what I'm going to show is a series of pictures, and they're about Britain and a little bit about the world. And for the parents, in a way, they're about how geography has changed, because you may be surprised what's happening to geography. For the younger people, what I want to try to go over is how geography at university, in some ways, may be different to geography at school. And if you're interested in doing it, have a think about these things. When I was 18, I was first presented with this picture by a geography lecturer, then a young lecturer, called Peter Taylor. Except I wasn't shown the picture. I was presented it by being told there's another way of looking at the world and how the world is arranged. And according to that way of looking at the world, this is the view from Euston. All these cities are not connected as we see them connected on the map. They're economically connected in a very different way. And in the centre of the world, this was according to Peter Taylor, there is New York and London, which are the kind of twin stars around which the rest of the world economy revolves. And you're in the heart of London now. Now, this may or may not be how the world works, but what's fun nowadays, as compared to when I was a young geographer, is that rather than simply wave your arms, although we still wave our arms a lot in the air, and kind of talk about these things in the abstract, we can also stick a picture up, so at least we have a better idea that what I've got in my head might be similar to what you've got in your head. And it's this being able to pass ideas, graphical ideas, to each other in ways that may be a bit more reliable than the past that I think is interesting. Here you are. We thought we'd have a look at you. The lovely thing about geography is that you can always map it. So you need to look very carefully to see where you are. If you're aged between 7 and 11, you're one of the blue stars. If you're aged between 16 to 18, you're one of the green stars. Each of your own stories is an anecdote. Each of your own stories is you, it's unique. But when we begin to put you together, once we've got 16 of you, we can begin to get a pattern. All these patterns are made out of people's individual stories. And the immediate thing you think when you look at that pattern is, oh, is half the country missing? What's happened? Have they not been teaching geography as much up there? Or not? So, if you've seen some of the maps I've been involved in drawing, which probably means you're under 18 in this room, you may not be surprised at what you see next. If you're over 18, you may be surprised. Hold on to where your star is in relation to the other stars, and now try and do the hard mental thing. Okay. The map before was a normal map of Britain. The problem with a normal map of Britain, from the point of view of you lot, is that there are lots of mountains, lots of empty places where you wouldn't expect anybody to win a prize from. What we've done here is we've stretched the map, so we've made London big, and all the national parks are small. And this is a map where every person in Britain gets the same amount of space. And you'll see that the stars are spread out quite a lot, but not completely. So why might they not have spread out completely? Well, it's a map of people. And of course, these awards are for young people. And the children may be more distributed towards where the stars are. But these are awards for geography. And geography may be more taught towards where the stars are. So if we had data on all the children studying geography in schools, the map would change shape again. And I do think, if you look at the green stars, we do know that A-level geography is more biased towards the southeast of England. And so we see it again. Anyway, that's where you are in population space, if you want to memorise that. Let's go from 16 of you to several million. This map was drawn using census data, data on who gets to universities, data on who gets to which groups of universities, which becomes very contentious. And then we've coloured the map to pull out the biggest differences. The standard map here, without showing you the differences from the average, basically said that back then, most young people went into full-time work. But if you take away the difference from the average, you get this kind of incredible, almost a geological pattern appearing. It looks a bit like a geology map, but it's about life chances and differences in life chances. And for me, the fascinating thing isn't so much this map, it's how this map is changing year on year. And it's quite a complicated map to do, because what you have to do is take everybody in their 20s, find out what they've done, and then move them back to where they were at 15 to colour in the little squares. Because one problem with youngsters is you tend to move around a lot, which is kind of good for you, but annoying for us. Okay, a couple of world mapper maps of the world, but again, these are a little bit new. The Times Higher newspaper magazine produces the rankings of universities in the world, and they asked my colleague Ben Hennig and me to have a look at where all these universities were. And so this is a map of a very unequal world. The map is again stretched. I'm afraid I've got very used to these stretched maps. So we've made India big, so it's the same size as the population of India. We've made China bigger, which is the green. And you'll see, amongst these top-ranked universities in the world, there really are entire areas completely missing any. And then there are these real clusters in North America and Europe, and a few in Japan. Now, I have to say, one of the reasons for this patterning is how universities present themselves. In Japan, universities are a bit more modest. In Britain, there are currently 30 universities which all claim to be in the top 10. And that's part of the reason why you have the higher clustering. But we've changed the map again. Now the area is GDP, a kind of measure of income and wealth. This took ages to do because it's not just the whole country's GDP, if you're geeky and interested in this, but I guess you're probably over-averagely geeky if you're here. You have to begin to accept that. If you look within a country like China, the green area nearest me, you see we've managed to work out which parts of China have most of the money, not just China as a whole. And you'll see the universities are a bit more spread out in this space, but still, clearly, there are going to need to be more universities in China, and there probably will be less of a concentration in the future in the areas which are most concentrated in. But it's just another way of looking at data and looking at the world. I was told by my friend Carl Lee, who teaches A-level geography, not to ignore physical geography. I'm afraid at university level people do completely separate, and we have the humans and the inhumans at university. But for me, because I like pictures, the best thing about physical geography is it just produces by far the best pictures. We're a long way away from getting to these kind of pictures for human geography. And the most stunning picture for this year has to be Super Typhoon Haiyan and the devastation it wrought, but also the idea that these typhoons are becoming more frequent, they're getting bigger, we don't know what's going to happen in the future. You can see the eye of the storm there from space. And to get an idea just how big it is, this is an image I think released by the BBC, just showing you how enormous that storm was. And what we're going to do is take that image and then put it over Europe to give an equivalent. We'll center it on Amsterdam. And images, maps, they work differently from words, don't they? That they engage a different part of your brain to words. And geography has these. It's a real huge resource of geography. We kind of have part of the copyright on images. And in the world that's getting better at using images and producing images and collecting data, the future for geographers of showing things in different ways and getting people to think differently, I think is very good. The historians are very good at producing TV at the moment, but I think they're on the way down, and geography's on the way up. a last physical geography picture for you. One of my favourites, except when I was living in Sheffield, high up on the hill, and this kind of thing really was a bit of a problem. When you're at my age, what happens in the future, for me personally, becomes less important. But if you are a young prize-winning geographer, quite what's going to happen in your lifetime is much more important. I have 3 children. Odds on, if my children follow the national average chances, one of my 3 children will live to be 100 years old. In 100 years' time, you'll begin to see the effects of the climate change that you've all endlessly learnt about in classrooms. And the question is how we're going to deal with that, and how we hope the next generation in another 100 years' time are not going to have to deal with something even worse. One more physical geography picture of human geography, and then I'll end with a particular couple of strange maps to get you thinking. This is the Nile, Cairo and Alexandria, taken quite recently, and you'll see it all lit up now. What we're going to do is take that particular image, but we'll take it for the whole world, and we won't put it on a normal map, because on a normal map, one reason why the lights are not there is because it's desert and there's nobody living there. We're going to put it on that population cartogram again, so that if you don't see any lights, it means there are people there. But either those people are very good and green and have decided not to shine light in the sky, or they simply can't afford or don't get electricity and can't run lights. So this is what the world looks like when you give everybody an equal amount of space and you see what happens if you send satellites around and take pictures. And for me, the really interesting thing, there are lots and lots you can look at in this image, and you can see where we are. But if you see how Cairo and the Nile is now brighter than Tokyo. Tokyo used to be the brightest spot, just a few years ago. And if you've ever been to Tokyo, you partly know why, because it's a sea of neon lights. And one reason Tokyo is no longer the brightest spot is that people have turned some of those lights off. And one reason they've turned some of those lights off is that they now have far less electricity in Japan, because they've had to turn a series of power stations off. So if you can remember that image, I'm going to take you back a few years. Look at Cairo, look at the Nile, look at Tokyo. And then we go back. It's just 3 or 4 years earlier. And you'll see the incredible developments in somewhere like Egypt. But also how Japan is now consuming, or at least wasting, less electricity than before. One incredible change, I think, at least in my lifetime, is how we now look at the world differently. When I studied geography at school and at A level, we had this incredibly, I can say this because geography A level books are now much better, we had this incredibly turgid book that told us where you went to get tin and copper and so on if you were running an empire. And I had to learn about which parts of India and which countries in Africa Britain could exploit if it wanted to become richer. Now there's a very different attitude to the world and a very different attitude, I think, to our place in the world. And of course, geography textbooks now are full of beautiful colour pictures, which is different. Last 2 pictures before we give out the slides. What happens if we go really human geography and we decide we're going to just get rid of all the physical geography, including the oceans? Because you may have noticed that we were using the oceans and the sea before as a kind of cue to know at least what you're looking at if you do this. And this is what happens if you take away most of the sea. We've left a little bit in so you can see the Mediterranean, but we're really showing where people are. So this is a map of the world, just showing people and not showing anything else about them. And what happens, you may be wondering why I've put up that tiny little village in India up there. When my colleague and I produced this map, we thought of buying a plot of land there. And the reason we thought of buying a plot of land there, which is incredibly cheap land, is because that little village is actually the population centre of the earth at the moment. And we thought, could you make it into a geography Disneyland? But apart from my lack of entrepreneurial spirit, of course, the population centre of the earth is always moving. So by the time you've put up the kind of signpost saying you now are at the centre of everything, the centre of everything would have changed. So here's a new map of Monday for you. Here's a new image of the world. And one big thing which has changed is that suddenly, rather than being at the very centre of everything, in the middle of those two twin stars around which the world economy rotates, London and New York, here you're sitting on the far northwest edge of a mass of 7 to 8 to 9 to 10 billion people. And your position is suddenly very different depending on how we draw the picture and how we see the world. Congratulations on making it to here, and thank you very much for that little geography lesson and putting up with it. Thank you.